Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Polished Woman, only on LA Talk Radio.
The Polished Woman.
And now your host, the award-winning Jessica R. Unavaj and the Polished Woman. Hey, Jess.
Why is your voice like that? It's so sexy.
You know, because I feel like if you're going to have an announcer for the show, you have to have a strong announcer for the show.
Oh, my God.
It brings the women to the room. Who runs the world?
Oh, my gosh. I know.
Hey,
that's
Jess.
How are you? Happy
yes,
Monday.
You look beautiful. Your skin looks so glowing.
You had
a good weekend with your husband?
No, I know. I have this very good doctor who pitted me.
Oh, really?
Pitted me. Dr. Carlo.
We love Dr. Carlo.
I know. It's like, Doc, I don't have a budget. He's like, just come here.
So what did you have done?
You know, because I told him, I said, I have something going on, you know, that right. Secret, it's going to come out.
No, hold on,
soon.
Wait. You have something going on, but it's non-medical. Everything is good. It's very good. We promise everyone that it's an amazing adventure that Jessica's partaking. So when she says she has something going on, everything is good. So don't start the rumors. We don't need them. Everything is good. God is good. Jessica's moving forward. So
yes.
I have to say that, Jess, because you know what happens. You say, I have something, then people think, what's going on with her? You know.
Yeah. So it's good. And then Dr. Carlo Honrado, if you need any, you know, facial procedure, he's just amazing. He has a good heart as well.
And we've had him on the show a bunch of times.
Yes. No. Yeah. We promoted him. Yeah. So thank you so much, Doc. Thank you. I appreciate you. Super. Well, this morning, Max, you know, like how we've been so, you know, you and I, we've been so close to God and everything. And we just like, you know, we just have this deep relationship, right? Today was the first time that I had my vaccine, by the way, this morning. I had my vaccine and today, I don't know why I'm so emotional, but I just saw this guy. He's like walking and he couldn't, you know, he said he couldn't walk straight. He was literally like limping and he's old and, you know, he was so skinny and I was outside waiting for my turn and I saw him walking with the trash and I was like, oh my gosh. I said, I want to, you know, give him something. And literally I don't have any cash in my wallet except for $20. And I followed him. I did my vaccine and I followed him and I just can't give him more. So I asked for money from my daughter and we gave him $40, but I wished I had more and I literally cried. You know, like this is how when you really truly want to give love, you feel it from your core. Like, I want to give more, but I wish I had more.
You know, that's interesting. Because yesterday I had to go to a party here in my neighborhood, the barn party, right?
Yeah.
And I had to get a gift for the hostess.
Yeah.
And so I bought something and I was like, oh, but I want this so badly for me. You know, and that's the true gift. When you want it for yourself, but you give it to someone else. You know, and I have to tell you, and I get a lot of heat for saying this, and I'm, you know, I have the courage to be disliked.
Yeah.
But Jessica, you know, it's like, that's why sometimes I have a problem with some religions who ask their church for money.
Yeah.
You know, it's like giving money to someone directly in need for me is so much more powerful.
Right.
Because you see the person, and what you're not only doing is seeing them, you're validating them. You're telling someone who might not be having a great day, I see you, I hear you, you matter. Now, when we give to a church, we give a percentage, we write a check, and then it goes into a big pool, you know, and the church does what they want. But when you have the opportunity to give to someone in need, and you say to them, this is what I have, I hear you, I see you, you matter. The money doesn't even matter. It's mm-hmm. that moment of validation where you yeah. basically, your soul reached to their soul mm-hmm. and you became a global family. And that's yeah, what this show is about.
Yeah, that's why I opened it up because, you know, I felt like, oh my gosh, I felt like he's like, you know what I mean? Have you ever felt, I felt like, oh my gosh, I felt like he's my, you know, my brother in this world that I want to help. And I just couldn't help it because I only had literally like $20.
Don't worry, you know, the money doesn't matter. What I love about you is yeah. that you heard the calling and you did it. Do you know how many times people are scared to approach someone, scared to give someone money or appearance wise? I'm not like, I'm going to keep my distance. I remember years ago, I was at the gas station and mm-hmm. this woman pulled up, you know, and she just looked exhausted. Yeah. And so I said, you know, let me buy your gas for you. And I almost didn't do it.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? I said, I want to buy your gas. She yeah. started crying because, you know, it's aww. Like, but the point was, I didn't want to do it. Because I was like, it's late. I don't want to bother her or scare her. But, you yeah. know, it's like when God leads you to do something, you do it. Look, yeah. just like when I discovered Fatu in the subway, you know,
that's
the model,
so, oh God,
I didn't
so
want
true.
To go up to her.
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, I have to do this. So I think for you, it's so courageous, Jess, that you listen to your heart. You listen to your spirit. You yeah. trust that you are going to help someone. And you went through and helped them. So I love that about
yeah.
you. That's special.
Aww, thanks, love. And then also another lesson that I've got from this man today. He's an old man limping, but he's there trying to make a living. You know what I mean? Trying to, you know, he was like literally getting trash from the trash yeah. can. I mean, you know what I mean? Even if you're old and even if you're limping or whatever, you have who you are, you can still work. So don't waste your time. You know what I mean?
You know, that's for all the daughters and all the children listening.
Yeah.
You know, who have their parents do everything for them.
For them, yeah.
You know, it's like, take a minute and just notice other people are suffering. And
yes.
these kids today are in such a position where there's everything is done for them.
Oh,
you know,
gosh,
like
yes.
Gandhi said, if be the change you want to see.
Be the yes. change you want to see. Yes.
We have a great show today, Jess. So I'm going to go back into
yeah.
the control room, get everybody ready. Dr. Desai is here and Shotgun is here from India.
India.
We are going global today on The Polished Woman. So Jess, have a great show. I know it's going to be motivational, yeah. inspirational, and it's going to really help women be comfortable within themselves.
Yes.
So have a great show, Jess.
Thank
and Jess,
you.
Before
yeah.
we get into the show,
yeah.
you know, everyone's like, oh, The Polished Woman. It wasn't overnight that The Polished Woman was created.
Oh,
you know,
no.
You went through a lot to realize
yes.
who you
yeah.
are. And not yeah. only in your brand, in your business, in your show, but also who you are in God. So
yes.
it really took you many years, but
yeah.
it was worth it. So
it was so worth it.
Have a great show.
I want to share this with you today. How was I able to be comfortable with myself, with my skin, with my identity being in a foreign country? So what makes you different or weird, then that's your strength. That is a quote from Meryl Streep. So yeah, that's super powerful. We currently live in a world that's more connected than it has been at any other point in human history or any given day. I can eat a meal from a French restaurant, work out to K-pop music or whatever music, speak to family and friends back in the Philippines and watch movies or TV shows in Bollywood or Hollywood just as easily as I can watch something made here in America. This may seem like an extreme example, but take a moment and think about your own life right now, where your clothes are made, where your groceries come from, where your entertainment comes from, and who you're interacting with on a regular basis. And it's likely a pretty diverse list. Despite this, however, if you're a person of color, you probably have at least one memory where you've felt incredibly uncomfortable or unsafe simply for being in the skin you're in. So this is why I invited our guests for today are expert, and I am joined also by her student and myself as well, being an example, moving here in this country, you know, being a Filipino and Asian, especially with what's happening around now. So that's why I want to talk about this, being a family as one. And I love her. Thank you so much. It's we have her, our expert for today, the incredible Dr. Vishakha Desai. Hello, Dr. the senior advisor for global affairs, the president of Columbia University, senior research scholar at its School of International and Public Affairs, chair of Columbia's Committee on Global Thought, and author of World as Family, A Journey of Multi-Rooted Belonging. And later on, we're going to be joined by one of her students, Shagun, a consultant for environment, social governance, and business and human rights, an accomplished researcher, speaker, and businesswoman, and the co-author of Walk with Women, Gendered Perceptions of Safety in Urban Spaces with Leading Cities. Thank you both for joining us. But first, let's start with Dr. Vishak. Hello, Dr. Desai.
Hi,
welcome to our show.
Delighted to be here.
I just spoke to Max about this because, you know, just like you, I was born in the Philippines. I'm Asian as well. And I moved here to the Philippines, leaving my identity back in my country, moving here at age, I think I was 40 years old. And I was like, what am I going to do here? You know, how am I, I didn't speak like fluent English. English is my second language. I have an accent and I'm like, I have children. So I'm like, yeah. And I don't have any friends. Like I left everything there. So I was like, how am I going to start in this country? How am I going to be accepted? How am I going to, start a new career? And the only thing that and be validated, because the only thing that I knew was like show business. I was really very insecure when I, and scared. Well, not really more insecure, but maybe uncomfortable and scared, because I was like really a fighter. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. So, doctor, first, can you please briefly tell us why you think in some place that as diverse as America, that not everyone feels comfortable or welcome? And your story as well, doctor.
Sure. Well, let me just say that you came at an age that was a bit older than I was. Uh-huh. I first came to America as an exchange student, and it was in Santa Barbara. And that meant this was more than 50 years ago, mm-hmm. when there were not a lot of Indians, and most people thought I was Mexican. So just think about that, right? Because they had not seen too many Indians. And this is in 1966. And I think that what you're talking about is that we do have this idea that anybody can come here from anywhere and make a life and become American. Yeah. However, the opposite story is also that only people who are truly American are European origin. So you have this dual kind of track going on. Mm-hmm. And when there are people who come who don't look European, for some people, that means you're not American enough. And that is something you notice in the rise in hatred and hate crime against Asian Americans right now.
Yes.
Because of what happened with virus, and people thought it was Wuhan virus, and therefore all the Chinese were to be a problem, right?
Yeah.
So anybody who looked Chinese was going to be a problem. Rather than recognizing that some Chinese have been here for 200 years, in my book, what I really talk about in World as Family is that in America, we have the potential of having the whole world come here, not only then learn to be American, but in the process, also change what it means to be American, to open up the identity of what it means to be Americans. And I think that once we do that, if we learn that, if we accept different people in America or in India or anywhere else, that is the first step towards treating the world as family. Because some countries, they don't do it so well. But we have the potential to do it here,
Yeah. My gosh. This is like, actually, in the Philippines, it's also like this. That's why I mentioned before that we don't really have any racism back in my country. We actually have a classism in my country, because when you're a foreigner, you're so welcome. Like, we welcome you with open arms. And then moving here, it was different. I was like, oop, you know, am I going to be accepted? It took me a while, doctor. It took me a while before, even before doing the show. I was with, even before doing the show, I was scared to do this. But doc, what does acceptance mean to you?
I think that to me, first acceptance has to be self-acceptance.
Okay.
You
I like that.
Have to be comfortable in your own skin. And you have to recognize that if you only depend on other people's acceptance of yourself, already you've lost half the battle.
Oh.
Because you have not actually come to terms with who you are. And one of the biggest ideas that I propose, that lots of people have talked about, but I talk about it in the book, is that this idea of identity as being totally fixed is a problem. Because people come, they go to different places. Today, more than 300 million people are living in a place that they were not born in.
Yeah.
That is almost as many people as live in the United States. So just think about that. People are on the move. And the second part is that communication is easy. The world lives in our cell phone. Young people know that. Young people like Shagun have lived with this. So we have to recognize that make the identity question not too fixed. Keep it open enough so you learn new things. As you learn new things, you adopt new things.
Yes.
And the trick is to accept yourself in that fluid idea of living with an identity that's also growing and changing.
Yeah. But let me like, check this also. You accept or you accept you know the whole idea of you know what do you call that, being in a foreign country, right? But you still have to be who you are, right?
Yes.
You have to be authentic and not be, because I know a lot of, like, you know, like a lot of like, you know, other people that I know of, like the way they speak, they're so Americanized. They try so hard. They don't even speak, to disguise their authenticity and ethnicity. And sometimes they don't even want to speak my language because they feel like, they don't speak Tagalog anymore because it pisses me off when they do that. I'm like, seriously? You know?
Well, I think that what that means, that I feel, for example, I came here at the age of 16. Mm-hmm. Then I went back to India and I came back again in 1970. That was already long time ago, you know? It's what, 50 years now? More than 50 years? And the truth of the matter is, that if the language matters to you, then speak it well. So I speak Gujarati still pretty well because it matters to me.
Yes.
But I also insist that whatever language you speak, if that's important to you, speak it well too. So it's important to me to speak English well because that is my adopted country. And I think so that notion of authenticity, what does that really mean? Even the word authentic self is not about being fixed in only one place.
Mm-hmm.
Authentic self is also the changing self. So I suspect you, Jessica, came to this country and you also changed in the process as you came to this country. And accept that too. You're not going to be exactly the same as you were in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Shagun came to study at Columbia for her master's program.
Mm-hmm.
She would change too. Then she goes back to India and people might expect her to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
Well, that's not always the case.
When
I went back to India after 1 year as an exchange student here, at a time when you couldn't make phone calls, it was like impossible to connect. I didn't speak much of Gujarati, my own language at the time. And I go back and people kept saying, what's the matter with you? You're speaking English with an American accent. And I thought, that's what I spoke for the whole year. What do you want me to do? This is what I learned, you know? And so part of it is that it does mean that your authentic self also has to evolve, has to change with the time that you find yourself in. And so it's not easy. But one of the things I talk about in World is Family and the book is keep adding layers and don't think you have to discard something in the process.
Oh.
And what that means is that some things will get blurred, something will get a new dimension, but keep being expansive in the way are in the world. And
why
is it's not just because it's good personally. Yeah. We need it because look at this pandemic shows us that you can't be an island unto yourself. You have to actually be part of the world. And we have to train people to say, how can you be locally rooted and globally conscious at the same time?
Wow.
Just think about that. Locally rooted and globally conscious.
How can we do that?
I think the way to do it,
paradigm.
Well, so the shifting of the paradigm is exactly it, which is to say global is not some abstract idea that's sitting out there by itself, rootless, where people are going and coming with their suitcases and there is no sense of belonging. It's like, the Goldman Sachs guy who's going from one place to another. But there's also other kind of people. Look at the Filipino nannies who go all over the world. And they, too, are global. They're going and coming in different places. They don't always get accepted in all the places.
Yeah.
But we have to learn to accept and respect, as well as cherish, the differences within ourselves and within our community. Once you do that, then you recognize that global is just another layer. It's like there's a local layer, national layer, regional layer. So you are a Filipina, but you're also a Californian. You're also an Asian. Mm-hmm. Also, you're an American of Asian origin. Mm-hmm. Each one of those are different kinds of identities.
Yeah.
And you have to celebrate all of them.
Yes, of course. Yes. Wait, so we're going to bring in Shagun. Hello, Shagun Sethi. Hey.
Is Shagun there?
Is she here? Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much. For everyone who is listening, Shagun is actually coming from India, and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. So thank you, Shagun. Okay, are you... Okay, good.
Muted?
Hi, Shagun.
Oh, hi. Sorry, I was on mute. But thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Oh, my gosh. We're coming in and waking up in the middle of, we're interrupting your sleep. Okay, Shagun, how about you? You know, what is your opinion? Yeah. Okay, so first talk us about Dr. Desai. Talk to us about Dr. Desai, how you met her, and then what is your opinion? Yeah, what is your opinion on why some people don't feel as comfortable as others? Yeah. Okay.
So I am a big fan of Dr. Desai. I will just say that when I begin. I think when I was in India, I've been born and brought up in Delhi. And I did my undergraduation here. I studied in Delhi University. Mm-hmm. And it was always a dream to go to Columbia because, Columbia was my dream school. And Global Thought was, when I saw it, I was like, this is exactly what I want to do. And when I was reading through it, I read, Dr. Desai's profile. And I remember writing in my journal that the one thing I want to do in New York is meet her. That's it. I didn't have like anything else planned. I was like, go to the Met, meet Dr. Desai. And so, she would remember that I was insistent on like having just one meeting. I was like, I just want to see you. I just want to like absorb what you've done because I think.
Wait, why did you want to meet? Why did you want to meet Dr. Desai so bad?
So that's the thing that, growing up in a country and, not seeing people who look like me in positions of power is a very, very difficult thing, right? Because you grow up having to be your own hero. And then you see someone like her who established herself, created a niche for herself and became this important symbol of, international relations, of global affairs, but also of kind of bringing Asian culture to America. So for me, it was very important because I want to be that. I want to be that face when I, grow up. Mm-hmm. And so seeing kind of all the different things she had done, it was like, I had to meet her. I had to just kind of be in her company. And so that was kind of the reason why I wanted to meet her. And then obviously since then, my life changed because I got a great mentor and she's just guided me through so many different things. But coming to your second question more about, you know, yeah. why is it that some people don't feel accepted so much yeah. is I think there are many layers to that. But I think as young people, our identities are always kind of made by what we yeah. should be. So everyone's constantly telling us that you should be this and you should be that. So as an Indian girl, I should be quiet. I should be shy. I should want to get married. I should want to do my education and then do whatever it is after that. I should, you know, there are too many shoulds around us and there's no space for us to figure out who we want to be and who we are, right? Like, who is it that we are in this global, you know, paradigm that we're living in and what is the global that we're contributing to? And I think for me, that bridge was education, kind of educating myself and gaining that kind of, you know, the privilege of education enabled yeah. me to see who I want to be beyond these layers that people have put, you know, put these boxes around me in. So I think the reason why people get stuck and people are not able to move out of, you know, hiding their identity or not being able to feel comfortable is because we're living in boxes that society has created for us. Yeah. And there's no kind of, there's no line that is merging these boxes together, except the world we live in is not black and white. It's so much of the gray and so many different colors. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you know, I think that, you know, I've considered myself a global citizen since I was in high school. And I have only lived abroad for maybe 9 months, right? Like, I've only lived in America for 9 months. But I'm global.
Oh, only 9 months?
Yeah, because I was there for my degree and then COVID hit. And then
it's a one-year program.
Yeah. Dr. Desai, how do you feel when you, you know, when you hear, you know, from your students about like how, you know, yeah, this is like the impression that you made on her. Isn't this amazing?
Well, you know, the first thing that I kind of feel is, and I can't believe it. I can't even imagine that Shagun sitting in Delhi had figured this out that she wanted to meet me. So that in itself, I had not focused on my life as a public figure quite that way. Yeah. But I have realized that different things I've done. When I first became the director of the museum at the Asian Society, mm-hmm. and then the president, the letters that I got from high school students of Asian origin saying, we have never seen women of color, people like that, in important positions. And that, therefore, I was aware that somehow it's not, you know, let's hope that by the time Shagun is in power, which she will be, that it would not be an exception. It would be just completely common, you know? And I think that that's number one. Number two, I think what is special about Shagun, and now I have to give her the compliment, and that is that she is determined. She knows what she wants to do, and she wants to learn. I think that that is rather unusual, quite that focus that she has. I mean, she's barely, what, Shagun, you're 23 years old, right?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
she
is out there and a go-getter, and, you know, and the truth of the matter is that I've been very privileged to meet women and young men like that in the program that I teach, the Global Thought MA that we talk about, but also the exchange students that I meet. I just think that the young people today are absolutely incredible. I came to this idea of global over a lifetime. They are living in it from the get-go, as she said, since she was in high school, you know. Yeah. When I was in high school, I haven't even flown until I came to America. So there's a different time in that sense. And I think that what is important to recognize is that no matter what your experience is, I think Shagun is right, that either you put yourself in a box or people put you in a box.
Either way,
when you get constrained by those narrow definitions of yourself, you don't allow yourself to grow and you don't allow yourself to experiment and to learn. And it's not easy, but it's important because the world is moving too fast.
Yeah, it's not easy, Dr. Desai, but your students are incredible because you paved the path, right? You did it. Well, yeah. Well, Shagun, yeah. Mm-hmm. What gave you the courage, Dr. Desai, to pave the path? Is it your your upbringing? I've heard that you're the third amongst the seven children, right?
Right. Well, I will say that I feel extremely blessed to have been born in India, mm-hmm, at the time that I was born, 2 years after independence, in a family of freedom fighters, mm-hmm, where my mother had also been a co-founder of one of the first women's institutions in India. Mm-hmm. She did not get married till she was 31, and my father was 33. So Shagun will tell you, it's exceptional today, and it was especially rare in her days, which is in the 1940s. And that as a result, we were really brought up to say that as women, you can do anything. So this idea of getting married, which is such a big thing in so many cultures, especially in India. And my mother always thought marriage should be seen as a choice, not a foregone conclusion. If you choose not to be married, it's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. And it should be seen as a comma in a sentence, not a period. Oh, so just think about that. There's before, life after, and your life has to be something that you make. It is not marriage that's going to define what your life is. And then you will figure out how to do that. Even though, I mean, I completely refused her advice and got married very young, and then got divorced, you know, that kind of stuff. So somebody has to rebel, you know, that's okay. But I think that I do feel very privileged, not that we had a lot of money, but the values that at the time, mm-hmm, and especially coming out of the independence movement, mm-hmm, with a very strong Gandhian principle of simplicity,
yes,
that what you look like is less important than how you think.
Yes. Oh my gosh. This is so... Wait, we have a social media question for Shagun. Max, can you come in? Wait, Max, I can't hear you. Okay, there you go.
Sorry, please. Yes. So, hi, Shagun. We have a wonderful question from social media. And the question is, of all of the teachings that you've learned from Dr. Desai, what has been the biggest lesson that you've learned from her, and how are you implementing it into your life? Mm-hmm. Good question.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I've learned is just don't take no for an answer, and it's okay to be the woman who's doing it. I think one of the other things that I learn a lot from her is that, you know, she's taught me, because a lot of women of color who are in positions of power are the only women of color in those positions of power. But what I've seen from her is that, you know, there was this thing that they did at Columbia, which I carry with me, which was, who is the woman who's opening the door for you? And the thing about Dr. Desai is that she's not wanting to be the only woman of color in a room. She wants there to be more and more and more women of color.
Oh, wow.
And
I think,
so that's what I want to do. I don't want to be the only woman on the Fortune 500 list. I don't want to be the only woman of color, you know, who's speaking and who has this presence. I want to be one of those women. And so to normalize this, you know, identity that we have, and to be there where we are because of what we contribute and what we bring to our conversations, is what I'm learning every day.
I love that. That's so unselfish of you. That's amazing, because most of them are like, oh, I just want to be the one. I want to be the only one, right? No, follow-up question, Max, for Dr. Desai.
Dr. Desai, we have a follow-up question off of Shagun's answer, which is, what is something that you have learned from Shagun that you are implementing in your life?
Perfect. Well, I am absolutely in awe of Shagun and number of the other younger students that I work with, is that they are relentless. Their energy to do things, to make a difference, mm-hmm, energy not just to add their resume, but to actually make a difference in the world. and to do it no matter what age, where you are, how you do it, and get what you need to do to make a difference. That kind of an idea, it's rare. And I learn from that every day because I realize that when I was her age, I was probably more naive than she is. And part of it is that she is part of this global community. And I've known Shagun not just as a student, but also as a colleague in a completely volunteer-led organization called One Shared World that we all are part of. I suggested that to Shagun and other students. They now are important and central pillar of that idea of interdependence of the world. One Shared World is based on the idea that's very complementary to World is Family and what I write about. So this is something I'm passionate about. And I feel that if we don't think about this interdependence in relation to independence, we are dead as a global citizen.
Hold on.
Thank God for Shagun and all the other kids.
Yeah. Shagun, how were you comfortable about, you know, when you moved here, how are you comfortable about yourself and your, you know, color when you moved here? Was there any, you know, was there anything that you felt, you know, insecure about, or, you know, because you're very smart. Oh my gosh. And you're so pretty. I mean, what was your experience and courage that you, you know, you did when you were here, or the confidence, how did you get that?
I think the imposter syndrome is very real. I think a lot of young people feel it, where you feel like, you know, you're the only woman of color, or only person of color in a room full of white people. And that was a lot about what, you know, New York and Columbia University is, because, you know, you felt different. And that was very much there. I was very insecure at different points of time. But I think for me, what worked is it's a privilege and it's a unique experience to be born as an Indian girl. Because when you're born in a society where you see everything around you, right? There's not, like, poverty is not hidden from you. It's right in front of your eyes. Inequality is not hidden from you. It's right in front of your eyes. So when you grow up seeing differences in society, when you grow up seeing that there are different people whose voices have been, you know, completely crushed due to oppression, you grow up believing that you need to speak up when you can. And if you're given a stage and you're given a platform, you need to use it. And I think that's gave me the courage, because if I had, the way I looked at it was, if I have that chance to be at Columbia for 1 year, I carry the legacy and that kind of, you know, the sisterhood of those many girls who couldn't come and who couldn't get educated. So I know that I feel insecure at times, and I know I sometimes feel like, okay, maybe I'm not, you know, the smartest person or whatever it is, but I do have something to say because I bring with me stories that are not told and voices that are not told. So I think that's what gives me courage.
Wow, this is amazing. Are you going to pay this forward? You going to pay it forward, you call that? Are you going to pay it forward, whatever you learn from doctor?
So we actually, me and a colleague of mine who work at One Shared World, we're the only two young women of color who are, you know, in the board of directors, and we, you know, help, like, take, you know, decisions and stuff like that. And we actually reached out to Vishaka and we were like, Vishaka, we want to write a paper on this. Like, what is empowering first generation women to, you know, kind of bring about change? And we just want to do a research paper. And what we discovered in that process, because we interviewed 10 people from all across the world, and we found all of these 10 different women from different professions, different parts of the world, all women of color, they all said they need sisterhood, they need support, they need community.
Yeah.
With that, and we created a platform called Luna. So it's NUNAH.live, and we've created a platform where you can find mentorship, support, and community online, and we're going to help you link to mentors, and it's for all ages, and you can kind of, you know, build that community.
Wow, that's amazing. Can you repeat that? That's Nuna, what Nuna. Is the organization? Nuna.
It's
how can women sign up for that?
You can just go and follow us on Instagram for now. And then we'll have a lot more coming up on our website.
It's Nuna.live, right?
Yes.
Okay. And doctor, I think
Shagun should tell you what the word Luna, how they came
to it. What is it?
Very
what is
cool.
Luna?
Yeah, tell us more about
it. Very interesting. So when we came up with the idea, we were like, you know, we need to create this platform. And so we wanted it to be multi-rooted in its, you know, the identity of Nuna. And we wanted it to come from different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. So Nuna, much like Dr. Desai's book, has multi-rooted belongings. And so it comes from three different words. It comes from the word Nur, which in Hindi, Urdu, and Arabic means power, light, and beauty. It comes from the word Luna, which in Spanish means the moon. And in Hawaiian, it means the leader. And then if you put Luna and Nur together, you come up with Nuna, which in Korean means elder sister. And so it kind of
so it's
just...
N-U-N-A-H?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. That's a beautiful name.
Beautiful and cool, right?
And really cool. Yeah. If I'll have another daughter, I'll name my daughter that Nuna. It's so wow, and it means power. So many meaning. Oh my gosh, leader. Oh my gosh, this is amazing, Doctor. You mentioned about your book. I cannot believe we only have like 8 minutes left. This is so. I want to talk to you more. You have to come back, Doctor. Can you tell us about your book?
It sounds like we are family.
Yes.
What it is.
Yes.
Our world as family.
As family, yeah.
And this particular phrase, believe it or not, is 3,000 years old. It comes from a Vedic phrase and Sanskrit long time ago. And essentially, it starts out by saying that only those of limited mind actually think of their blood relatives as their family. People who have a bigger mind actually know that they have to treat the whole world as family. Yes. And this is fairly well known in India as a phrase, but the reason why I chose it is because I was writing this book at the time when everything global, people were attacking, global is bad, global is not rooted, global is out there. And if you're a globalist, you are anti-American, lots of that kind of language. And I felt that you needed to reclaim this word. And it was really people like Shagun and other young people that I've taught, I realized that they are global natives. They live in a global arena and local arena at the same time. So then I had to ask myself, gee, how did I become so passionate about this? So the book is really a kind of a journey coming from a secondary smallish city in India, coming to America and the advantages and privileges I've had to actually become part of the world without giving up my sense of being Indian or from the small city of Ahmedabad, and at the same time own my New Yorkerness too, right? So the point is that the book is really why it says a journey of multi-rooted belongings is that I'm actually trying to say global is not rootless. Global is multi-rooted. And in fact, if you recognize that, you will have some sense of stability. Like biodiversity of the planet in the climate crisis, people talk about it as more diverse things there are, the stable the environment is. We need diversity of people, cultural diversity, to make our world more stable. And that is what the book is about. It's got lots of stories, wonderful things about my connection to museum world, art world, doing things, meeting officials. But most importantly, it is to try to learn each time these episodes and events occur, and to really work with young people because they're the ones who are going to really pay it forward, definitely.
Yes.
That they're the ones that the world we have left them is not a pretty place. So we have to do all the work we can to make sure that we at least create some stability of our environment. And that's what the book is.
Wow, you have to buy her book. I have it. Where can you buy your book, Doctor and Shagun? You both have your books.
My book is published by Columbia University Press, and you can go to columbiauniversitypress.com. You will get that, or EDU rather. and Amazon, independent bookstores everywhere. You can buy the book. And in India, it's published by Penguin Random House. So it's a big commercial publisher, and you can get that in India as well. So it's available everywhere in the world, actually.
Wow. We have to make it a world bestseller. How about you, Shagun? And I have another question before we close it. How about you? Where can they find your book?
So the book, I mean, the Vishaka's book is everywhere in India. So you can go to any bookstore and kind of find it, I think. I'm just going to add to what she was saying to describe the book. I think, you know, a lot of books about globality kind of preach to people and say that this is what should be and this is what you are and this is what, you know, needs to be done. But what I love about this book is how raw it is and how authentic it is, because it feels like home, right? Like it, she talks not only about the good stuff, she also talks about the in-between and, you know, the kind of journey that you have. So I think for young people, because a lot of us are right now moving, we all have this kind of link to the global. So for a lot of young people, you have to read this book because you're going to like carry this with you wherever you go.
My daughter would love this.
I would love it.
Okay. Do you have a book, Shagun? You have, right?
Yeah. Not yet.
Okay. Last one. What are the three things you think people can start? Three things that people can start doing right now to feel more comfortable in their own skin or to help others feel more comfortable. Shagun, let's start with you and I'll end with Dr. Desai.
I think number one would be occupy space. Be comfortable in occupying space. You're there for a reason. Okay. Number two, don't second guess yourself and don't self-reject. I think a lot of times what we as young people do is reject ourselves from opportunities because we think we're not good enough. Yes. Don't self-reject. Okay. If you think that you're, you know, if you think you're not smart enough, you are actually smart enough. And the third thing I would say is the most important thing is carry and remember where you come from and remember who all and what all you can impact in the world. There's so much we as people can impact. The kind of, you know, what the number of lives that we can impact. So be kind. That's the most important part of it.
Wow, that's so nice. How about you, Dr. Desai?
My goodness, I don't think I need to say anything more. She said it all. It's fabulous. You know, wonderful. But what I would add is try things. Just try it out. Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
So if you fail, okay, there's another chance, number one.
Wow.
So go to the top of the mountain, even if that means like, oh my God, what have I done? Number two, put yourself in other person's shoes. Always try something where somebody else is coming from a different place, and therefore it gives you a sense of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
So first is curiosity and experimentation. Second one is empathy, to really kind of try to say where somebody else is from. And the third one would be not only just to be kind, but to be reflective. Ask yourself, why you're doing what you're doing? What can you do to change? Don't expect always the other people. And don't blame things on other people. Actually try to figure out facts, not what your country can do for you. Do what you can do for the country.
Wow, this is literally the epitome of and the meaning of the real meaning of love, I feel like. And the polished woman. These two women are polished women. I wish that everyone are just like you, both of you. I will have to have my daughter go to your class, Dr. Desai. daughters.
I would vouch for that.
No, many daughters should go to your,
and just read the book. It's okay.
Yeah. And Shagun, you have to start being a mentor. I feel like this is your, you can mentor all these teenagers that are starting. You got it from, you know, Dr. Desai. This is so amazing.
That's why she started Nuna, right? So
don't
forget Nuna. Absolutely.
Nuna.live. If you guys need, you know, any comfort, advice, if you're here in the US or anywhere in the world and you feel uncomfortable and insecure and you know, thank you. So together we rise, together we are love. Thank you so much for both of you. Thank you. I appreciate you being here. Shigun, thank you so much for waking in the middle of the night just to be with us. And good night. Good night. And thank you so much, Dr. Isai. I hope, you know, maybe one day we can continue this conversation.
Love that. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Bye.
Thanks.
So, bye-bye. I hope you learned so much from our show today. This is like literally about love. You know, remember that while there are people in the world who can be needlessly cruel needlessly cruel, there are also those who can be exceptionally kind and loving. So be kind and loving. Be a comfort to someone else and help them see how beautiful and special they are. Thank you so much. And we are not going to be here. Yeah, have courtesy and empathy. That's what we learned today. And thank you, Ronan. Ronan, I will miss you. We love you. Happy trail. Happy trail. Thank you so much. And I hope, don't forget to give love to the next person that you see after watching and listening to our show. Thank you. And follow me on Instagram, The Polished Woman, at The Polished Woman. And yes, see you. Oh, we are going to see you the next Monday after, because next week, yeah, we have 4th of July off. So happy 4th of July and please be safe. Thank you so much. Bye. Thank you. Through faith, love.